This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. A couple of weeks ago, the winners of the 2021 Pulitzer Prizes were announced. The winning book in the biography category is The Dead Are Arising, The Life of Malcolm X by the late Les Payne and Tamara Payne. It's a book that Les Payne spent decades reporting, speaking with family and others who lived and worked with Malcolm X, the iconic and polarizing leader in the Black Freedom Movement in the 1960s.
When the blind leads the blind, everyone ends up in the ditch, and no one will deny that the American so-called Negro has been here in America in a political ditch, in a social ditch, in an economic ditch, a rut for the past 400 years.
Les Payne, however, died in 2018. By then, he'd finished most of a manuscript on Malcolm X, and his daughter, Tamara Payne, who'd been principal researcher on the project, picked up where he left off. Yale historian David Blight calls the book the most lyrical and complete biography of this uniquely brilliant American ever written. The book is a great read, full of original insights about an elusive figure rendered deeply human, Blight says. The Pulitzer Prize is just the latest award for The Dead Are Arising. It also won the National Book Award for Nonfiction. I spoke with Tamara Payne on the 21st back in January, and in light of the Pulitzer, we wanted to revisit that conversation today. Because we're re-airing this segment, you will not be able to call in, but as always, we'd love to hear what you thought about this conversation. You can email us. The address is talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org, or tweet us at 21stshow. Okay, here now is my conversation with Tamara Payne, co-author of The Dead Are Arising, The Life of Malcolm X. So I want to begin where the book does, with the early life of Malcolm Little and a night call from the Ku Klux Klan that would become a part of family lore. Can you talk about that story?
We decided to start the book out with where when Malcolm wasn't born yet. He was in utero. His mother was pregnant with him, and they were living in Omaha, Nebraska, and they were visited by local Klansmen who were not happy or pleased with the work that Malcolm's parents were doing and their work with organizing local Black families and developing their community and developing their businesses and raising their own consciousness of being Black. At that time, there was a lot of the way social society was very anti-Black, and they didn't like independent-minded Black people, you know, who were proud, and they wanted Black people to not stand up for themselves. So the Littles were organizing Black families in this sense and helping them develop their businesses and organizing them through their work with the UNIA, which is the organization founded by Marcus Garvey. And what they wanted to do is to kind of control that. And they visit upon the Little family, and they were informing her to get out of town, to move.
And Malcolm is in the womb at this point, and I mean, she's defiant, right? I mean, she's not, foolhardy maybe, but I'll let you characterize how she responds to this visit. Cause the father he's out of town. He's hundreds of miles away. And that's why this, I think, becomes, you know, such an interesting place to start the story, because it, you know, it sets up the family from which Malcolm X originated.
Yeah. And in addition to setting up the family, it also sets up the society the world that Malcolm is born into. And also this being in the Midwest, that Louise Little was very proud and strong, and she had a higher education than Earl Little, and she was very, you know, concerned with language and all that. But when it comes to standing her ground, she was a very strong woman, and she was not, you know, fearful. You know, she was not easily scared off. And you see this in throughout the book and the stories that we talk about when, you know, she's raising the children. And even when she's a single mother raising, you know, 8 children, I mean, she, the strength of her to even get through as far as she had gotten under the enormous pressures that were closing in on her. This woman is very strong-minded woman. and proud and very insistent on how she was going to educate her children. And Earl, who's also very strong-minded and proud, he had a very great work ethic, and that was something that he had imbued onto his children.
So I'm glad you mentioned that, because I want to jump forward a couple of chapters, and that strong-mindedness and that pride led to trouble for the family. They ended up moving around a lot. When they got to Lansing, Michigan, they did not like the part of town that they were quote unquote supposed to live in. And they moved into a white area, and the family is terrorized. There's firebombing. And ultimately, Earl Little, the father, is killed in what at the time was called a streetcar accident. What did this do to the family? Can you talk about this event in the life of Malcolm X?
Well, Malcolm was very close to his father, and often his father would take Malcolm to, you know, when he was younger, to meetings that he ran as a regional president of the UNIA. And so they had a close relationship, and Malcolm got to see his father run these meetings, interact with people. So he learned about, you know, how charismatic his father was and speaking with people, and that people, you know, were pretty open in talking with him. He was a really strong organizer. But when he dies, he had such a strong image in the family, and he was such an important role in the family. I mean, not only just as a father and a husband, but like even when they had moved into these different places, he would organize he wanted to own land, and he would organize the neighbors in doing how they were going to share their crops and then even sell them later. But they would rotate how they would different crops that they would raise. And so he was a provider, but he was an organizer. And once this person is, you know, removed from the family, that's huge. Not having this person, you know, in his life, and that he had such a strong relationship with Malcolm, a close relationship with Malcolm. And Malcolm just at that point, you know, is always kind of searching for that role to be filled, it seems. And, you know, and you see that in different troubles some of the trouble he gets into as a teenager, he starts to wander, but he always speaks proudly of his father and he misses him. And, but, you know, Earl was really important, and not having that father figure and who's also bringing that income and to stand up, it left the family vulnerable. But also what happened is that the older brothers, Wilfred in this case, you know, he stepped in as best as he could. He was in his late teens, and to help out the family as best as he could, even to the point of moving out to Boston with the help of their half-sister, Ella, who was a child of Earl's first family. He had a first marriage, and Ella's a product of that. And she lived in Boston, and Wilfred went out there to get a better paying job, and he would send money back to the family, the Little family. And then at that point, you know, Malcolm was wandering, and he was a teenager, and, you know, he wasn't in the better frame of mind, but he would steal that money, and it would not go to what it was set up to do. And so it kind of further hurt the family. But this is also during the Great Depression, where everybody was suffering. So, you know, there was enormous pressure on the family. And it eventually led to the family being pulled apart, where the children were sent off in different directions. Malcolm ended up sent off to Mason because he was a kind of a delinquent, but they wanted to help him with reforming his attitude because they felt that, you know, he wasn't a bad guy. He just wanted more attention. So they were working, the state at that point was looking to help him reform. And he ended up going to a reformatory home in Mason and going to school there for a year. He repeated the seventh grade. And then the other children were sent off to other families who, you know, helped to raise them that Louise had known.
Well, we need to take a break in a couple of minutes, but before we do, I want to ask about, you mentioned some of the trouble that Malcolm was getting into as a teenager and his search for a father figure. Is that what drew him to the Nation of Islam ultimately? That search for that, to fill that vacuum in his life?
It definitely has been portrayed that way. And I would say what happened with the Nation is that his family got into it. So his family kind of brought him into the Nation of Islam. Wilfred is actually the first person in the family to join the Nation. And Malcolm's in prison at that point, and Malcolm had his crime spree, and he was serving, you know, 7 years for the robbing gang he had in Boston. He ran in Boston, but during that time, he's realizing he's 20 years old when he goes in, and he's changing his energy from being so physical and confrontational to he's starting to read more. He's meeting people in the prison who are telling him, you should use your mind and not your fist so much. And he is reading more. He starts to debate. He's reading every book he can get his hands on. And at this point when his family, so he's looking at other ways of what is his next step going to be when he finally ends up getting out? I mean, he may not have thought about it, but that is the trajectory he's going on. And his family, who's gotten in, joined the Nation of Islam, and they like it because of the Garveyite principles that are there as far as building up your community and you know, supporting the businesses and stuff and the Black community and helping Black people stand up for themselves. They bring Malcolm into that. So Malcolm, yeah, I think he definitely had the need for looking for his father figure, but he's also, it's his family that brings him in there too.
More to come with Tamara Payne, co-author of The Dead Are Arising, The Life of Malcolm X, after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Now, through the end of the show, we're re-airing a conversation I had in January with Tamara Payne, who wrote, with her late father, Les Payne, The Dead Are Arising, The Life of Malcolm X. Her father, Les Payne, passed away in 2018, and Tamara finished the book he had been working on. She had also been his principal researcher. A couple weeks ago, the book won the Pulitzer Prize for biography. Here now is the rest of my conversation with Tamara Payne. There's so much ground to cover here. It's a long and thorough book, and we don't have time to get to all of it. So I want to jump ahead to Atlanta in 1960, and Malcolm X is giving a speech describing a, quote, frontal assault upon the New Testament promise of the hereafter, so widely accepted by the Black community. That's a quote from the book. I found audio of a speech that Malcolm X gave in Atlanta in 1960. I'm not sure if this is the exact same one you're referencing in the book. And I should set up that this ultimately leads to a meeting between the Nation of Islam and the Ku Klux Klan. But to set it up, I think we need to talk about this speech and what he was saying in Atlanta and some of the nation's orientation toward the Christian religion at the time. And let's listen to this clip.
The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that it is foolish of us to continue to look forward to a heaven someplace or a paradise somewhere in the great beyond, up in the sky above the clouds. Some of you even accuse the Honorable Elijah Muhammad of being anti-Christian because he teaches that Negroes should have a heaven on earth right now. Think of that. Imagine teaching a religious man such as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Imagine accusing a religious man such as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad of being anti-Christian or anti-Bible or anti-Jesus or anti-God or anti-heaven. Simply because he teaches America's 20 million ex-slaves that it's time for you and me to unite and try and build a heaven for ourselves right here on this earth in this life.
So, Tamara Payne, I want to ask, the church was such an important part of Black life, especially in the South, especially in the civil rights movement. How was this message received in that time and place?
Well, it depends on who was listening to it. Yeah, I mean, I have met people who were alive during that time, and they would often say that, you know, Malcolm was not looked fondly upon, and certainly not the Nation of Islam, because of, you know, their quote unquote anti-Christianity message. And you know, Malcolm Malcolm and the Nation of Islam, I mean, they were dealing with the here and the now and the changing of their black people's conditions in the country today. It's my doorbell ringing. And changing their situation right now and not praying for it to happen one day and not just solely reading scriptures. They looked at the Quran, but they were really focused. I mean, energetically, their focus was changing the conditions of their situations in their communities. And the other thing is, I think, to look at with Malcolm is that when you look at the other groups, like Martin Luther King, who was a minister and his father was a minister. And believe it or not, Malcolm's father also was a minister and his grandfather was a minister. Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement, they were also looking to change the condition of African Americans. But, you know, they were appealing it through a Christian way. Malcolm was anti that because he felt that did not deal with in a more effective manner way of dealing with their immediate conditions. And whether where people fall in agreement or disagreement of this is where they fall. I mean, it's just, I think we need to understand where the positions were, these groups were. Now in Atlanta in particular, what I always kind of look at is more on the social political aspect is that Martin Luther King and his groups with civil rights movement, core as well, is that they were looking at the superstructure of America and white supremacy and segregation in Jim Crow South. And so what they were looking to do is change the superstructure and the laws of what was governing their lives. So that's immediately changing their conditions of African Americans. But and to integrate with white Americans, and they're dealing with, you know, what I like the quotation that Martin Luther King uses, that segregation, it imbues the segregator and the oppressor with the false sense of superiority, and it imbues the segregated, the oppressed, with the false sense of inferiority. And what Martin Luther King and his groups were dealing with was that false sense of superiority of the superstructure that was in power. And, you know, and remains in power, but they were working on changing the laws through bus boycotts, desegregating schools, desegregating lunch counters, desegregating stores, creating employment opportunities. Whereas Malcolm and his group, they were working on building up the Black community. And they often said they didn't want integration. They wanted separation. They wanted to be in a state by themselves with their own laws. That goes against what a lot of Black Christians at that time were looking at, Southern Black Christians. But then there were people who said that it did appeal to, and they were listening. So they would listen to this message, and it helped imbue them with, I'm trying to change my condition through my own actions right here and right now, and building up the community and their organizations and stuff like that. But it's important to understand that, you know, what Malcolm and Martin were doing was they were coming at it dealing with segregation and the power, the superstructure, but they were coming at it in different aspects. And Malcolm was focusing on dealing with Black people and how they saw themselves and building up, you know, not totally and beating up against this internalization of how the greater society was wanted Black people to see themselves as less than, not worthy.
So Malcolm is in Atlanta giving this speech, and by happenstance, he happens to be on hand because he's there when a telegram is delivered. And we have only 8 minutes left in the hour, unfortunately. So there's obviously way too much here to get into, but what are the big consequences? The KKK seeks a meeting with the Nation of Islam. What are the big consequences of this encounter?
I think, you know, what happens with this is that the KKK, you know, thinks that they can align themselves with the Nation of Islam, see that they can have some kind of relationship against what Martin Luther King and his civil rights compatriots were doing and their successes of beating down Jim Crow, the laws and desegregation. They felt threatened by Martin Luther King's work and they saw him as an immediate enemy. So they look at the Nation of Islam, because they're saying that they don't want to integrate. We don't want integration either. So they approach and have a meeting about that. Elijah Muhammad wants to build, wants to set up a separate state. He wants to buy land. He wants to have access to water. And, you know, and he's, you know, trying to figure a way that maybe the members of the KKK can help them in get acquiring this land. Because as you have to understand that, you know, people who are in the KKK, I mean, they're not only just, you know, KKK, but they're politicians, they're policemen, they're, you know, probably even realtors. And so they're his thinking is that maybe they can figure out a way to get their agenda of setting up a separate state. Malcolm does not want to do that. He rather would have a confrontation with the KKK because of his own experiences with them. I mean, yes, he believed that the KKK killed his father. And that did not happen, but they were definitely a presence in his life. Obviously, From Utero will reopen the book, but also let's also think about how the family was pushed off their land in Lansing when they were young. Before his father died, they were basically evicted from the land because the white neighbors did not want them on that land. And there was an exclusionary clause in the deed that that land should not be owned by a black family. And so they moved to evict them. And then their house they set a fire and burnt down the house. So there's this tension and that, you know, that this exists. So Malcolm wants nothing to do with having any kind of alliance with the KKK. He rather would have a confrontation. And when he realizes that Elijah Muhammad is not going to do that, he doesn't want to set up a deal, but he also wants to have an impact on the meeting. So it's not that, you know, the Nation of Islam is going hat in hand fully and taking, you know, whatever the deal that they can from the KKK. And Malcolm also is realizing in this whole interaction is that he is not in agreement with Elijah Muhammad on this. And it starts this rift between him and Elijah Muhammad, and it just grows after this. But yeah, I mean, that is one of the biggest consequences, I would say, is that it starts the rift between Malcolm and Elijah Muhammad. And it's a strong rift. I mean, there may have been other things before that, but this really starts that rift.
And ultimately ends with Malcolm's assassination. You have a line in there about the different perspectives of the KKK and the Nation of Islam and their ideas. You know, yes, I can see, you can see on paper where, okay, they both want separation, but as you write, quote, the whites' end game of segregation was reprehensible. The Muslim response, he being Malcolm X, viewed as a smart act of liberation. I want to go to we have a caller on the line. Troy is calling from Springfield. Thanks for calling in. Welcome to the show. Go ahead with your question.
Sure. Hi there, Tamara. My name's Troy, TNT. I'm calling because I was wanting to know if you could define the title a little bit more, go into more detail. It creates a lot of imagination for the reader. And the second thing is, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the relationship between Malcolm X and Muhammad Ali.
All right, Troy, thank you for the call. And just a few minutes left in the program, but Tamara Payne, author of The Dead Are Arising, The Life of Malcolm X. What about that title?
The title comes from, the Nation of Islam, when they would refer to people who are not members of the nation, they would call them the dead. And once they joined, you know, it was part of this process of coming into consciousness and embracing the truth of who you are as black people in America. And so they would consider that rising. And the direct lineage of the title comes from a letter that Malcolm had written to Elijah Muhammad, where he is organizing the Hartford Temple, and he's writing back to Elijah Muhammad about his progress in Hartford. In Hartford, where is, you know, largely Christian, black, you know, the black people there are largely Christian, and there are a group of people who were interested in organizing a chapter of the Nation of Islam there. But in recruiting for that temple and getting other people to join, he was coming up against opposition with Christian, you know, with a lot of the Black Christians there. And so he talked about this in a letter to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and saying that, you know, we have obstacles there, but we're making progress. And he said the debt there are rising, meaning that they were coming to the consciousness, they were opening up, and we even are gaining ground and gaining members into that chapter.
And Muhammad Ali, briefly, a relationship between Malcolm X and you said the debt are arising. That's the X, right? Is getting rid of the enslaved name that had been assigned to.
Well, the X
people.
Is part of the initiation when you decide to join the Nation of Islam. Actually, it's not getting rid of the X. It's actually when you do get the X.
Right.
X
I'm sorry if I
misspoke. Your last
yeah,
name,
exactly. Yeah.
Or as they would call it, the slave name, and. So, and it meant, you know, the unknown. So, yes, that's what that is. And then as far as Malcolm X and Muhammad Ali, they were very close and very influential on each other. You know, Malcolm was not responsible for bringing Malcolm to the Nation of Islam, but he definitely embraced him when he did join and, or certainly when he came around and then, you know, they became very close. And to the point where when Muhammad Ali had his fight down in Florida, and he brought Malcolm down there, his whole family, and that was like the only vacation that Malcolm's family had ever experienced, meaning his wife and his children. This was in 1964. So, they were very close. And they did fall apart when Malcolm left the Nation and Muhammad Ali stayed, but they, you know, that relationship kind of with even extended with the children. Muhammad Ali was close to Malcolm's children.
That was my conversation recorded in January with Tamara Payne, along with her late father, Les Payne. They wrote the book, The Dead Are Rising, The Life of Malcolm X. It's just won the Pulitzer Prize. It already won the National Book Award for Nonfiction. And that is all the time we have for our show today. The 21st is produced by Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.